Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday, the 4th of January, our first show of the new year of calendar year 2021, and it's a great pleasure to be with you. I wish I could say that all of the fear and loathing of 2020 fell by as we tore that calendar page off, but here we are, back, knee-deep into it, and we'll try to give justice to the incredible and just astounding stories that we have to cover this morning. Is that a cat?
Yes.
Is that your cat? Is that your cat, Libby?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it's one of them. She doesn't know.
Well, he seems pissed. I don't know.
No, she doesn't necessarily know where she is.
Oh, okay. All right. Then I will stop making fun. Yes. Okay.
Right. Right.
I will. Well, good morning, everyone. Let me introduce the panel to you, and then we'll get started on the news. Such as it is of the day. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Alan, a very happy new year to you. How are you?
And to you, Joe. I'm here. I'm alive. I'm, cautiously optimistic that on the 20th of January, we're going to have a new president, no matter what this. And I think this guy is now committing, the president is committing impeachable offenses. I do. In other words, he is now asking a Secretary of State to falsify the election results in Georgia. From my perspective, that is something that ought to be handled criminally, both in Georgia, by the way, which has laws against it.
Right.
And that's a state as opposed to a federal offense. We know that they're doing that in New York or looking at it, and that ought to be done in Georgia also. He's tried to take away Raffensperger and his counsel and everybody else, and to not so subtly threaten them with recrimination and legal things. So let's just see what happens here.
We got a lot to talk about, and we certainly will, because there's a lot we have to see and what happens over the next few days. We go to Coho City Director of Operations, Teresa Bourgeois. Happy New Year to you, Teresa. Good to hear your voice.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year to you and everyone else. And a belated happy birthday, Joe, that I got to say that on the air.
Thank you very much.
Hope it was a good one.
Absolutely.
And I agree with what I heard Stephen Skeep say this morning, which is this is a big, big week for our democracy.
Yeah, absolutely. And in so many ways. And we'll find out more as we work through the stories for today. Albany Law School professor and director of the Immigration Law Clinic, Sarah Rogerson. It's a good day to have a lawyer on the panel. There's never a bad day to have a lawyer on the panel, but
I'm glad you think so.
But good morning. It's a delight to have you here. Thank you very much for being here. And we heard her cat, but we didn't really hear her. It's Libby Post, a political consultant, and our dear friend. Good morning, Libby. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm okay. All right. So I'll try to summarize this the best I can. And we'll get to all of this and start talking. So it was a busy weekend. We all wondered why the president was leaving Mar-a-Lago early and left those poor revelers to bask in the tunes of Vanilla Ice and Glad Hand Rudy Giuliani. And he headed back to Washington, D.C. And in that, what was he doing? Was a military action? Was he planning? Well, he was on the phone apparently with the he was on the phone with Georgia's Secretary of State, and pressured him to change the vote totals in the state to overturn his loss. The quote in the all hour long phone conversation, which you can hear. Go to NPR and even our site, and you just click on it, and you can hear the entire one-hour phone call. He said, "I just want to find 11,780 votes." Georgia officials rebuffed his demands. The president suggested on the call that Georgia officials could be prosecuted if they did not do his bidding. But it was Trump's attempt at coercion that may have violated the law, according to many lawyers and election lawyers. During the call, the president recited a number of falsehoods that have circulated on social media involving dead voters, voting machines, and shredded ballots. Meanwhile, Senator Ted Cruz was once on the receiving end of Trump's false claims of election fraud. Now, Cruz is perpetuating those falsehoods. He is leading a cadre of U.S. senators, I believe 12 at last count, to go ahead and openly challenge the results of the election on Wednesday. Senator Cruz said, "We must believe the president." To which I say, if we extrapolate that on that, and we are going to believe the right-wing conspiracies that the president gives, then yes, Ted Cruz's father was responsible for the assassination of JFK. Meanwhile, in an op-ed for the Washington Post, all 10 living former secretaries of defense, this is extraordinary, including Dick Cheney and Jim Mattis, said the election results were definitive and cautioned the military not to get involved in Trump's effort to overturn the election. All 10 living former secretaries of defense.
Including a lot of Republicans, right?
Exactly. Dick Cheney.
That's the bigger story, right? Yes, there, Joe.
Oh, yeah.
And then both Trump and President-elect Joe Biden will campaign in Georgia today before tomorrow's Senate runoff elections. Democrats must win both seats to win Senate control. So there is the preamble to our discussion and gives you some idea of where we are. So, Alan, a lot to digest. You gave us a little preview. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, yes, it is the worst point that our democracy has ever faced a challenge, period. There's never been anything quite like this in which a democratic form of government is being challenged by a potential despot who wants to change the rules, who wants to change the results, and who lies through his teeth. Now, we've been counting lies on this radio station for a long, long time, but it is extraordinary how he just does it and goes forward. Now, here's an interesting point, right, Joe? We hear from Trump, but we're not hearing much from Joe Biden. We're hearing from CNN, we're hearing from NPR, we're hearing from me, we're hearing from people who care about this kind of thing. But in fact, Biden has been submerged, and this lying liar, who is despicable in every way, goes forward with what he's doing. I don't know what else to say. Now, the fact that these defense guys, former heads of the Defense Department, have all come together, including the Republicans. Now, we know that the Bushes have no use for Trump. And so, therefore, it's not surprising when you see somebody like when we see his former defense people and others and Cheney and all the rest doing what they're doing, because they are basically in that group. The fact that they're doing it, I know I'm rambling here, but the fact that they're doing it indicates that they think there may be a problem. In other words, why would they have to round up all the former defense secretaries? Why would they have to do that except that people are worried that this is really going to be a coup d'etat, of which I have been warning for quite some time, and which is happening. No question that we're having a coup, but now d'etat becomes important.
You know, you're absolutely right, Alan. I think that it was concerning to me that they are basically pleading with the military not to take action and not to be involved in this, and there must have been some warning sign that caused them to gather together and post this letter that was ultimately printed in the Washington Post. Teresa, let's go to you with your insights on this.
Donald Trump is who he is. His behavior is consistent with his, you know, behavior all along. What is more deeply disturbing for democracy is the enablers, as it has been all along, but even more so now. The fact that 140 House members and 12 or more senators would go along with this is really deeply, deeply concerning. And you remember in Watergate, what happened is the Republican senators are the ones who put a stop to Nixon's behavior and talked him into leaving as opposed to enable him. And why they choose, in my view, it's they're choosing money over democracy. You know, Trump has raised so much money that I think that they fear his power. And that, I think, is the real stress on our democracy. But equally disturbing is the fact that what is it that we don't know that these former secretaries of defense know that felt that they were compelled to come together and write this? And there was an Abigail Spanberger, congresswoman who was a former CIA agent. She tweeted out yesterday, "I can tell you this, every foreign diplomat and intel officer posted to the United States is surely writing cables back home tonight about the fragility of America's democracy and the depravity of her president." Mm. And I think that that's the enablers are what is so worrisome, that they would make this calculation. Interesting also that Liz Cheney, Congresswoman Liz Cheney, went against her fellow leadership and wrote a 21-page memo rebutting the case against these senators and suggesting what they were doing was wrong. And I find that fascinating.
So I wanted to ask you, if I may, you say the real problem is with the enablers, not with him who is what he is. I ask you a question. Would you say that about Hitler? In other words, was it Hitler or was it his enablers? I'm sorry,
Teresa.
On this one, I can't go along with you. Yeah.
Yeah, no, poorly phrased on my part, Alan, and you're right to correct me. What he did and what he said is against our democracy. It's shredding our democracy. It's deeply, deeply dangerous. But it's not inconsistent with what he's been doing for 4 years. It's not inconsistent with how he's lived his life. So it is appalling. It should not be normalized. I'm not a lawyer. I'll leave that to Sarah and others. It may be criminal. You're right to correct me on that. I didn't phrase it properly. What I'm saying is it's not surprising based on his behavior. What is surprising and untenable is that these senators would feel, knowing full well that what he's saying is not true, that they would risk the stress on our democracy to go along with him because they've made the calculation that this is good for their political interest. How is
Absolutely.
It possible that right now in America that choosing to weaken our democracy is in their best political interest? That's a dangerous calculation.
You are so right about that.
And as you were speaking, we received a press release from the office of Elise Stefanik, who said, "I'm honored every day to represent New York's 21st Congressional District, and I believe it is my solemn and sacred duty to serve as your voice and your vote in Washington. As the representative for New York's 21st Congressional District, I plan to object to certain contested electors on January 6th. I do not take this action lightly. I am acting to protect our democratic process." Libby Post.
Well, Elise is just showing her true colors once more. She's an apologist for Trump. She's just a pretty bad example of what it is to be a congressperson. And, you know, I've been watching, I'm still on Liz Joy's Facebook feed, who ran against Paul Tonko. And she's like Elise to the 10th power. But what Trump is doing, yeah, I said this to Lynn last night before we go to bed. I hated Nixon. I really did. I mean, I hated Nixon. I was a kid. It was 1972. I was 12 or 14 when all of that went down. But this Nixon pales in comparison to this, you know, and now Trump is threatening to sue the guys down in Georgia for taping the conversation, which I find amusing. And Sarah, I'm sure you're going to back me up on this because I read it this morning, that like New York, you only need one party to consent to record a conversation. So he has no way to stand on.
And it's admissible in court.
And it's in the, fine. Yeah. So, you know, I do think what he's done is impeachable, but we don't have enough time to do that. However, once January 20th comes along, the new Congress really gets into full swing and Trump is no longer in the White House, I think you'll see, as C.J. Craig famously said in The West Wing, isn't this a job for Congress? I think you'll see Congress do quite the investigation into this call and anything else that Trump, tried to do to overturn the election results. You know, I think that the defense guys, who I was fascinated by their statement that was in the papers this morning, they know what they're doing. And Biden knows what he's doing, too. Biden is letting Trump get out there on a limb that is so thin so that ultimately on January 21st, others can take over and take over this investigation and really put Trump where he belongs, which is in jail.
We do have just 2 minutes before we go to a break. So, Sarah, I don't want to shortchange you, but go ahead.
That's okay. I'm sure we'll have much more to talk about
after
the break.
Indeed.
And maybe I'll set the legal analysis to them, because, you know, I agree with Teresa, actually. I think it's the enablers. It's always the rotating cast of characters. There's a new lawyer involved somehow. People looking for their 5 minutes of fame, just like Elise Stefanik, although I've spent a lot of time in her district and I understand sort of why her 5 minutes have extended for so long, right? Because she's writing this narrative that's very popular with the core of her district. But the issue is, if he was in there alone, which he will never be, because I'm pretty sure there's also grounds for lots of different things being recorded on him at this point. He's a national security risk. So, you know, he'll not be in a room making these phone calls alone. But when he has these little posses, these little armies of people that he brings around him with various credentials, dubious as they might be, that empowers him and enables him to go on these expeditions. It's also clear to me that Georgia has gotten under his skin because, and Stacey Abrams in particular, because she's a black woman who made something extraordinary happen. And he can't stand it. And it's that part of his personality that's going to get him in the most trouble. And what we could talk about maybe after the break is, you know, everybody's sort of gathering around because they don't know if he's crazy or crazy like a fox.
Yeah.
And we've always had that open question. And that's going to play a big role in any sort of criminal actions that are brought against him, where intent is a significant component of many of the elements of the offenses.
I'm going to pause you there. That's a great point, though. We'll be right back and discuss this more versus this break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, Sarah Rogerson, and Libby Post making up the panel this morning. You know, one thing that I think is interesting about our discussion, and as we're discussing what happened with the phone call that was released, that happened on Saturday and was released by the Georgia Secretary of State, is that we know that similar phone calls were made in Michigan. We know that similar phone calls were made in Pennsylvania. The difference here being that we have this one on tape. To Sarah's point, and I would love to go into that a little bit of crazy or crazy like a fox, and that is a question that we've been asking over the last 4 to 5.5 years. And as you listen to that tape in its entirety, you know, you come down, I think, at least I did, you come down on crazy, but then you think of all the people that were put in that room and the response, that the fact that these defense secretaries are all getting together, and you wonder, okay, but yeah, is it crazy like a fox? Alan, any thoughts on that?
Yes, I'm definitely on the side of crazy like a fox. Look, in order to behave like he's behaving, you got to be crazy. I don't think there's any question about it.
Right.
But does he believe every part of what he's saying? Or is he making that stuff up as part of the overall crazy thing? I fight this out with my wife all the time, the wonderful Roselle, who thinks he's crazy, crazy. I don't. I think that he's a mean guy who has achieved what he's achieved, whatever that is, and we don't know what it is in life, by being mean. and by just saying whatever he wants and telling people to eat it. And that's the way it is. So
but
that's where I am.
To your excellent point, and I because I agree with you entirely, but to that point that you just said, but does he actually believe in his heart of hearts that he won the election in Georgia? Listening to that call, you get the sense that he believes it heart and soul.
My belief is he does not believe it. My belief is he's a big phony, and he knows full well he lost the election. And just like he has put up with his casinos and his this and his that, every time he does it, he just bullies and bullies and bullies. And that, so, no, I don't, you know, he's a liar, all right, but I don't think that means he believes it.
Teresa, you agree with that?
I agree with you, Alan. I think what he is masterful at is controlling the narrative. And my guess is that he's raising a lot of money on this. It'd be interesting in the next 24 hours how much more money he's able to raise about this. And that this just allows him to get back into the headlines and control the narrative. And it's part of the controlling the message. And if you look at what's going on in Newsmax and other things to try to reinforce, you know, the president was right. When I listen to that, and I strongly encourage people to listen to the entire thing, it really occurred to me that there's a large group of people who will believe this. And if you turn to Fox and some of the other stations, which, as I did last night, they're reinforcing this, and you see Elise Stefanik reinforcing and others reinforcing. And that's the danger of this. I mean, you listen to Mark Meadows on that tape, his chief of staff, who definitely knows better. And Meadows is feeding into the narrative as well. That's the problem. That's the risk to our democracy. He's doing what he wants to do, which is raise a lot of money, create his new path. But in the process, it's really weakening our democracy.
In a perfectly timed letter from Joan, she writes, "When I listened to the phone call, what I was taken with was clear, is that Trump, with his narcissism, truly believes that he won and the strength of those around him to feed him the lies to support this. There is no way that he had those numbers or details in his head. Those around him are preparing these fact sheets from far-right media and feeding them to him, and he has gobbled them up, and they just feed him more." Libby.
You know, I don't know if he believes he won or not. I think he wants to believe it. I think lots of people around him have told him he hasn't. I think, you know, there's what's going to happen on January 20th is quite clear. And that the shenanigans that some of the Republicans are going to pull in the Senate and Congress are not going to get anywhere. You know, yes, he likes to control the narrative, but he only has, what's today's date? The 4th? He's got 16 days left to control this narrative. And after that, you know, not that he's going to be put in the dustbin of history and not that he's going to totally disappear, but he will no longer be president. He will no longer have that bully pulpit. Yes, he'll have his 30 to 35% of the people who are so stupid they will believe what they want to believe. You know, and these are the folks that don't wear masks either. You know, all the Karens of the world. But he will be gone from the greater public consciousness because he will no longer have this bully pulpit, and Joe Biden will be president. And I think Biden being quiet right now is just helping Trump dig his own grave.
But it's 16 days, and it could be a hellish 16 days, and certainly the next three are going to be especially so.
Oh, yeah. There's no two ways about it, but just the same. Not going to change the outcome.
Sarah?
I don't think... Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Teresa, go ahead.
I don't think he believes he won the election. I believe he thinks it's keeping up the narrative helps him raise money and retain power. Just like I don't think he ever believed that President Obama wasn't born in the United States, but it was a narrative that worked for him, and he was willing to say it over and over again, and people were willing to repeat it. But I think the real issue is that it gains its power. These false claims gain their power because people like the House members and the Senate members go along with him rather than say, as Liz Cheney did, no, you're wrong, you lost the election, or a number of others. And I do think we have to give credit to the Secretary of State of Georgia and his staff for holding the line on this, as other state officials, Republican state officials, have done all over the country. I mean, that's the bright spot in our democracy.
Yeah, they ended the call.
You are so right about that, Teresa, because I'd love it if everybody who's listening to this program now says, no matter what I stand up, potentially lose everything, lose my constituency, lose my next election in order to do what's right. And I couldn't agree with you more. This is a very gutsy thing on his part, on Raffenberg's part.
Prior to the break, Sarah Rogerson, you said we could get into the legal analysis. So let's start to explore that, if you can, of, as a lawyer, how you look at this.
Well, a lot of lawyers are looking at this. I'm sure that there are, I mean, I know our attorney general has looked into a lot of different things with the Trump administration. I know that the Southern District of New York has many things pending. They've done a lot of, they've conducted a lot of discovery so far in many of those cases. We've heard about it in bits and pieces of different people being deposed. And this is a whole new ball game. This is a whole new rap sheet for our president in the future that he may be facing. And a lot of what the legal analysts are coming down to is the issue of intent, right? Did he intend to overthrow the election? Did he intend to interfere with the results of an election? Did he intend to incite fear in the mind of the Secretary of State in Georgia? I wonder also about his Twitter feed. There are so many admissions and sort of confirmation of his state of mind with regard to threats and accusations against others. I hope that's being archived. I believe that it is being archived in the presidential archives, which is a whole other concept that's just mind-boggling. You know, what will that look like 100 years from now when people crack that open and take a look to see what's inside? But a lot of legal maneuvering has to happen between now and any sort of even arraignment. And I agree with Alan, what he said at the top of the program, which is that there are legitimate impeachable offenses. And one of the things I'm wondering is what the mechanism is, you know, how long does impeachment, can you impeach a president after they're no longer in office if the proceedings are initiated prior to them leaving? I don't know. Like, there will be a lot of interesting legal issues that will make really unfortunate constitutional law around this president.
Postpartum impeachment.
Yeah, but I mean, the whole idea is removal of office, and if he's already removed,
right, I don't think he can.
Yeah,
no.
I don't. Well, okay. But there are other, obviously, there are other issues. Let's take a break.
Yeah.
You go ahead.
Okay.
No, go ahead, sir.
And there haven't been very many impeachments that have resulted in removal. So a lot of the time it's used for other purposes. So, you know, discovery purposes, to find out other things to lay the groundwork for future criminal proceedings. So something to think about.
But can he be held accountable, legally accountable, as opposed to be impeached? And I think those are two separate questions. And he probably, under Georgia law, if convicted, could be held legally accountable. But
I totally agree.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have many letters from our listeners. We'll get to those and have let the listeners chime in as well. We welcome yours. Your letter, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll continue right after this. First panel of the new year, and it's a good one. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, Sarah Rogerson, and Libby Post. We have many letters from our listeners. Let's get to those right away. Bernard's vote is for Like a Fox. I've acted like this my whole life, and look where it got me. President of the United States, a quote, it works and it will continue to work, says Bernard.
Good for him.
Jeff checks in and says, I read the transcript and was struck by the incoherence of much of what Trump said. He has trouble putting together and finishing a complete sentence. Ricky says, President Trump knows what he's doing. He's very smart. He wants to be a strongman dictator. He's also making money hand over fist with his falsehoods. His sheepish followers giving him their money are extremely foolish. Karen says, I think that Trump believes that he can control what is real. In his psychology, he needs to. Tim and Kathy write and say, just think what Trump would be saying today if we didn't have the recording. It would have been the perfect phone call. Paula says, listening to the tape reminds me of what Michael Cohen said about Donald Trump. Trump never asks directly, but rather suggests what should be done and then expects the suggestion to be completed to his satisfaction. Mike writes, I'm somewhat amused that Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley have risen to the defense, quote unquote, of Donald Trump in this congressional certification. It is known that both men have presidential ambitions, and this motivates their actions. What's really funny is if Donald doesn't run, he said he wants Ivanka to run. Do Cruz and Hawley actually think Donald will let them take away the nomination from his princess? The second part of that aside, Alan, what do you think it does mean for the political hopes of Republicans like Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley?
Well, it's clear when you get within proximity of being president of the United States, and these guys think they are, people are mentioning them all over the place, you do it. You know, Joe and panel, I'll tell you what's really working on my brain right now. We all assume, as I do, that on the 20th, Joe Biden will step up and take the oath and will become the president. But we have here a very dangerous man. Pardon me. And we've been talking all morning about, you know, basically, is there any bottom? We've also been talking about the fact that so many of the defense people, former chiefs of defense, Republicans and Democrats, have seen enough of a danger here of a military coup that they stand up and they say it's not going to happen, and we don't want it to happen, and we don't think it should happen, and all the rest of it. And this is dangerous. All right. If they're doing that, that means they know, maybe more than we know. I'm very, very concerned. Not that I don't think that Biden will emerge and will do what he needs to do, but I'm very concerned that this is a man, this Trump is a man, who could well say, I'm not leaving. Period.
We go to, anybody want to add to that? If not, I have many more letters to read.
Alan, I think he is leaving, Alan. This will be resolved on Wednesday. He will leave on the 20th, but he will not go away if he's empowered to continue this conversation. But I do think this letter from the 10 living former defense secretaries published in the Washington Post is deeply troubling. Clearly, I mean, they were sending a very clear message to those in the military to remember that the Constitution is what you follow. And the reasons why they're doing that are not yet clear.
Now, perhaps you didn't hear me, but I was very clear on this, Teresa. I do believe that Biden will take the oath. I do believe Biden will be the president. But I also believe that this man, and we've heard it from his sister, we've heard it from his niece, is capable of anything. So that doesn't mean that because Biden will be sworn in, that he won't try it.
Yeah. Sarah, were you going to jump in?
I just wanted to make the point that we have to remember that one of his biggest enablers has been every attorney general in the Department of Justice under him. And he's always pointed to, you know, Barr and others as a way to legitimize his behavior. It'll be really interesting. Biden has not yet made an AG, has not floated a name for the attorney general's office. And there's a lot of anxiety around that for a lot of different reasons, but it'll be very interesting to see how we forget what it's like to have a functioning democracy. We forget what it's like to have a strong federal government and a Department of Justice that will investigate high crimes and misdemeanors, so to speak. And so I have faith in the system. So that's sort of where I stand on that.
Well,
who do you think would make a good attorney general?
You know, Alan, there's like a list of 50 people that I could think of at present that would make a great attorney general. There are a lot more factors that are weighing into this particular decision, including the racial and ethnic makeup of the cabinet thus far, and more general diversity in terms of LGBTQIA and other considerations. Right, we live in a country of great legal minds. I am honored to be a member of this profession in this country, and we suffer from an abundance of riches when it comes to that post under this administration. It'll be really interesting to see how it unfolds.
And for some reason, I was suddenly reminded that Andrew Cuomo will be speaking to the state at 11:30 this morning, giving an update on the COVID situation. We'll be airing that at 11:30 this morning. Marion Wright.
Don't you think it has to be? Sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Teresa.
I think it has to be somebody who has experience working for the Justice Department, because they really need to understand the inner workings of the Justice Department, because it needs to be healed. And, I think, if you could get Eric Holder to come back, probably not Sally Yates, somebody like that. But I think it really needs to be somebody who has experience understanding deeply understanding right away the mechanisms of how the Justice Department is supposed to work.
Alan, who do you think?
I don't know, but I understand why people are not saying who they think it should be. But I can tell you who I think with the properties the person has to have. We're going to know a lot by who gets appointed. What we need is a tough guy or a tough woman. We need somebody who is tough enough to say, okay, no matter where it leads, we're going to do it. Now, there's some wonderful people out there whose names have been mentioned, but who don't strike me as being tough. And I think the appointment of this attorney general is going to have a lot. I'm sorry, Teresa, going to have a lot more to do with whether they've got the guts to do what needs to be done than whether they can make people work together or that. Because I assume that can be done with not only the head person, but the second in command or the third in command. So I'm looking to see who Biden appoints, because I think there must be a hell of a fight going on this right now.
Right.
Marion Rice.
I think on this, a labor secretary.
A labor secretary, too?
Yeah.
Libby, anything you want to add to that?
No.
Okay.
Good.
All right. Well, then we'll go back to letters. Marion says that impeachment can happen after office and would prevent him from running from office again. That, according to legal minds that are speaking on CNN. That according to the letter writer. Vicky says, after all you have said about the dangers to our democracy and what may happen on January 6th, what is our recourse? There seems to be no accountability except voting the senators and representatives who support Trump and his lies concerning the election out of office. This will not happen either because their constituents believe anything Trump says. The truth doesn't matter. I think it is inconceivable. They will stick to their ideology even if it will damage the country they say that they love so much. We go to
voting in Georgia would be a good step. That's one thing that we could do.
Well, we can't. But if you're in Georgia, you can.
People in Georgia can do that.
Dave writes, Trump had never said he lost and wanted the ballot stolen. He kept repeating he won and blamed the Georgia officials for hiding votes, being used by fraudsters, etc. He probably released the tape himself to show his followers that despite having his facts, quote-unquote, dismissed by the officials, everyone, quote-unquote, knows he's right and the officials are wrong. Suzanne says, I believe Trump is sowing the seeds to grow his own party. He intends to break off 30-35% of the Republican Party to form a new extreme conservative Tea Party-like political party, which will fracture the Republicans as well as feed his own narcissistic ego. Rich writes, Georgia Secretary of State Raffensperger is a licensed civil engineer in 30 states. He said, it's clear it's all about the data. You can have your own opinion, but not your own facts. Robert writes to us and says, I live in Elise Stefanik's district. She is a great future danger to the democratic process. She signed the sedition petition and must pay for her betrayal to her oath and her constituents. Lucian writes, Panel, I do believe the military needs to get involved in this election. Trump and his co-conspirators may need to be removed by force. Joan says, please
Oh, yeah? Who's that force going to be? That he may need to be. I keep wondering about that. You know, we've talked about, will the Secret Service, his Secret Service people, take him by the elbows and take him out of the White House? Who's going to do that? You know, maybe may have to be removed by force. What force?
I think they're going to pack everything up, which is what they usually do. And if he sticks around, he won't have a place to sleep. He won't have access to the kitchen and the ice cream. I do think he'll be gone.
You say won't. You should say shouldn't.
No, I don't think he will. But I also, going back to the somebody wrote about third party, I think that that's very likely to happen, that he will form a new party or take over Tea Party or whatever it is it's going to be, and will fracture the Republicans even further than they already are. I mean, Paul Ryan came out today or yesterday and said, what are you people thinking? This is not what a democracy is. And for Paul Ryan to do that, you know that there's a schism within the Republican Party that's not likely to be healed anytime soon.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have many more letters. We have lots more to discuss. A busy news morning on this first Monday of 2021. We'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, and we'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, Sarah Rogerson, and Libby Post. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org.
Joe,
yes?
No matter what, you got to really say, would you have heard what happened now with the rail trail cut and Raygraph? That's what makes WAMC so wonderful. And, you know, there's nobody like Ray, period. You know, and the way he plays it. And I got to tell you, I got a good guffaw out of that. I thought it was great.
Well, I thought if we had it, we should play it. And also, we were going on the fact that Ray said it was good. So we figured it was good, we had to play it. Right?
And it's good news, too.
Yeah, and good news. That's true. And God knows we need that. All right. We're back, and we have lots of letters. We'll go to those right now. And again, you can add to your, you can add to the pile. You can write letters too. Mark Meadows is the subject of this letter from Joan. Please discuss Mark Meadows' role in The Call, asking Georgia officials to find a workaround in the spirit of quote unquote compromise.
He wanted to seem reasonable, but of course he wasn't, because he was defending the indefensible.
Anybody else?
He provided evidence that he's part of the problem, because rather, you know, he's encouraging these this baseless information as fact, and was encouraging them to negotiate. I mean, I think he is complicit. He is absolutely complicit in this, and it was made clear in that recording.
He wouldn't be where he is if he wasn't complicit. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite moments.
The question is the earlier writer, I wonder what people think about that Trump would have wanted this transcript out. I agree with that. I think that this conversation just emboldens his people and helps keep them on his side.
Amy writes, what does Ted Cruz have to gain to support Trump's latest bid to overthrow democracy? I think we touched on that, but...
Well, it's easy. There's 90% of somewhere between 85 and 90% of the Republican Party believe that Trump is, you know, godlike. And therefore, Cruz wants to be president. That's simple. Wanted to be last time.
Wants to take control of Trump space.
Yeah.
Let's see. We go to Kim. Trump named a woman who he said stuffed ballot boxes in the beginning of the call. Her name was used, but then later in the call, her name was bleeped every time he said it afterward. I don't know. Was that? I don't know about that.
Yeah, because they I think the Post bleeped that because it's been proven that that's not true, and rather than keep repeating a false claim of naming a particular individual, I think the Post bleeped her name.
I see.
Or getting sued.
Yeah, no one was arrested for what he said happened, and the question is, can she sue him for defamation? Sarah, can she sue him?
It depends. It always depends. If it's not true, maybe, although this was a phone call, it's questionable whether or not he really wanted it leaked. There's a lot of questions.
Julie writes and says, I've been reading about the 14th Amendment and that people who have taken part in sedition can be unseated. Is that possible? What would be the mechanism for enforcing this? Also, how are treason charges brought against a person? How do we make that happen? Can we as citizens do anything about this? It's beyond waiting for elections. Who needs to be pushed into bringing charges?
These are all questions that we thought we'd never have to answer.
Yeah, that's
hello.
You know, there's certainly definitions in the Constitution, right? But a lot of it is vague language. We're going to be making new law here, disturbing, unsettling new law that we hope we never, ever have to use again.
If it happens.
Has anyone brought charges against Senator Graham? Remember Lindsey Graham, right after the election, made a similar call to the Secretary of State of Georgia? Has anyone brought charges against him? Does anybody remember?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything about that.
Roger writes, it seems like the House and Senate Republicans could learn a lesson about integrity from Georgia's Secretary of State. Republicans should be concerned about the terrible damage that Trump has already done to our Constitution. They have all sworn to uphold and protect. Overtly asking to overturn votes is blatantly illegal and certainly an impeachable offense. Impeach now, stopping in its tracks even further damage that the president will attempt due to his narcissistic inferiority complex. Even two more weeks of this nonsense is far too dangerous. Those senators and House members persisting in this charade should also be censured and publicly reprimanded by party leadership. We go to Michael, said, well, how many more recordings are there from additional states? When will they emerge? We did touch on that earlier.
You know, this is sort of interesting that what Dunnan, in the colloquial style, what Dunnan, Nixon, was the tapes. And here we have this tape. Mm-hmm. So there's a certain parallelism that may count. I think Trump was very careful here. You may not think so, but it wasn't exactly over the line to the extent that he could be brought to justice for.
Well, it was,
if you can't you find them? Can't you find them? Does that mean make them up?
Right. And it was the same thing. It was very similar to the call that got him impeached. It was the same call to Ukraine. That was very similar. That was very close. And left people just like to the line, but not over. The other thing, too, that I two things that I think one for me, the quote of the call was President Trump saying, but look, 5,000 dead people voted. And the secretary said, no, Mr. President, it was two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, that was great.
Which I was surprised it was two, but okay. That's interesting. And then the other thing, too, is that we found out later that he had attempted to call somewhere around like 18 times, something
yeah.
like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which I find that to be fascinating, too, in the sense that, you know, what what were they doing that they were too busy to take his call? I find that fascinating.
But the other thing that he did on that call, Joe, at the very end, there was a back and forth about getting information. And it's privacy information that he's not allowed to get. And again, Sarah, you're the lawyer here, but it sounded as if he was asking them to find a way around the law to get it to them anyway, saying, you know, can't you deputize my lawyers so that they can see it or whatever. And so there were a couple of cases in there where he appeared to question legal issues.
Sarah?
Yeah, I've been, so electoral privacy is one issue, right? And there are laws protecting the vote and which way you vote. And somebody can't call the Board of Elections and say, you know, they can check whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or undeclared or independent or green, whatever party affiliation you are, but they can't ask for what you voted and who you voted for. And there are a lot of really good reasons for that. I've actually been sort of poking around on the treason issue, and there is one Supreme Court case from 1945 that dealt with a citizen who was accused of aiding German soldiers to infiltrate American soil during World War II. The Nazi saboteur affair. Alan might remember the history behind that.
I remember it well, yes. I love that story told over and over again on the History Channel, right? They dropped them on Fire Island of all other places. Good thing Rosemary isn't here.
Yeah, I was going to say. But so the first Fire Island reference of 2021.
It's nice.
Good job, Alan.
Speaking of Fire Island. But basically that case established the overt act requirement, which limits treason claims. And this is that treason can only punish conduct, not mere expression. And it actually takes intent to betray the United States out of the equation in terms of state of mind, because the conduct itself has to show an intent to betray the United States. So if there's a question around the one charge of treason, there are many other things that we could be talking about, but it'll be whether or not these phone calls in and of themselves, irrespective of Trump's state of mind, whether or not the phone calls themselves indicate conduct that would demonstrate a betrayal to the United States, as opposed to election interference, or what he'll say, which is, you know, pursuing good faith claims upon, you know, based on affidavits that these phony lawyers have received, you know, have conjured up from different people, or the woman whose name was bleeped out, right? It's all about what are we going to tolerate? And it'll be up to the courts to decide.
And then the conversation will continue. What do people think that this will do? What impact, if any, it will have on the Georgia election?
Well, that was my next question as far as moving on. No, that's I'm fine with you asking it.
Great minds think alike.
But yes, what impact? I mean, we touched on this last week, I believe on Thursday's show, of what impact does Tuesday have on Wednesday? What impact does what's going to happen on Wednesday have on Tuesday?
Well, I've always thought. Go ahead, please.
Trump is going to Georgia today. If he gets up there and questions the validity of the vote, I think it will depress the Republican vote, which is fine with me. And I know that the other side, the Democrats, are really working very hard. But his questioning the validity of the vote and making it all about him and not about the two people who are running just plays into the hand of the Democrats. And I think he's too self-absorbed with his own desire to always be the winner to do anything but that. So I think this will have an impact. He can go and trash the Secretary of State and Brian Kemp, and you know, these are people who voted for both of them.
Yeah.
And so how much of it is also going to be a personal insult to some of these people?
It's already impacted the election. I mean, the day after the election, the presidential, people were printing out postcards to start shipping down to Georgia. And, you know, jury's still out on whether or not those postcard writing campaigns are effective. It's hard to tell. I certainly wrote a whole batch to Michigan for the presidential. But there are also lawyers that have been mobilized 4 weeks to perfect ballots that have already been submitted and rejected and need to be perfected and restored. I was doing that work for the presidential, and I know a lot of people are doing it now for this runoff, and I'm heartened by that knowledge. Like, but you can't sign up for slots anymore. Like, people have swarmed Democracy Protection. Millions of dollars have been donated to Stacey Abrams' nonprofit organization that works towards securing the vote. Millions of eyes are turned to the voter suppression laws in the state of Georgia. You can expect that that will have a ripple effect in the state legislature, hopefully, over the next several years. This is bigger than what happens on Tuesday. It's bigger than the phone call. I agree with Libby. The phone call will, if anything, suppress Republican voters. I am not super happy about that. I'm a democracy forever voter purist when it comes to that. I've helped Republicans vote, for example, in my role in voter protection. But it's already had an effect. The night, and I stayed up all night listening to the results for Georgia. That night, you could feel it, that there was a change that was going to have long-lasting impact, and I think in a positive way for the foreseeable future in Georgia.
And Sarah, you know, the money that you said, people are pouring money into Georgia, I just want to say we sent a quarter of our stimulus check that we just got to Fair Fight. You know, I put that government money to good use to help flip the Senate. And I hope, you know, and it's just another day, but people can still give because it's an important, it's two very important races. And on Real Clear Politics this morning, both Democrats, Ossoff and Warnock, were ahead in the polls. But we all know.
We don't believe the polls.
We can't really trust the polls anymore. It's going to be about how much voter suppression there is tomorrow. But there's been a landslide of early voting as well. So we'll see what happens.
So, Teresa, you asked the question, but I'm interested in your response. Do you think that what has happened here over the weekend and, of course, the buildup to it will have an impact on the vote that we see tomorrow?
Well, I think it might have a negative impact on the vote for Republicans, but I think who actually go to vote. But what I worry about is that it sets the stage to create a doubt about the outcome of the vote. Not sets the stage, it just reinforces the doubt about the outcome of the vote. I think that they see the numbers. I think that they see how many more people have registered, primarily young people, registered and voted, primarily young people, African Americans. So there has been an enormous voter turnout. However, if Republicans come out and force to vote tomorrow, the weather's supposed to be good, you know, that could be good for them. But if they do lose, then is this just narrative of not a fair vote going to continue about the outcome of tomorrow's election? I worry about that.
Let's see. We'll go to some letters here as we only have a few minutes before the bottom of the hour break. The White House is only a building rights peg, one that Mr. Trump derided at one time. He can barricade himself inside, but Joe Biden will still be the president with power. Mr. Trump can retreat to Mar-a-Lago, which is much closer to his egotistical style. Supposedly, he can only live there for 21 days total, and his neighbors don't want him there at all. That from Peg. Bruce writes, don't forget to mention the January 6th Trump rally in D.C. The rest of us need to stay home and not counter-protest. Trump wants us to fight with the Proud Boys. He wants chaos as a pretext for invoking the Insurrection Act. Don't give him what they want. Stay home January 6th. That is a great point on two fronts. One is the actual fighting of it, but the other one is the calls, the very concerning calls, I think, by... well, namely Louie Gohmert, but others, of a call for violence. Alan?
Yeah, well, you know, for our very good letter writer to write, don't go. He's not calling for you. He's calling for the other guys, for the Proud Boys and the other people.
No, but there are people online who are saying that the other side has to get out and to counter them. And
the Proud Boys are saying that they're going to dress all in black like Antifa does. So that nobody can really tell the difference, although all you need to do is look at them and you can tell the difference.
And you know, I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer to this. There is something, right, Libby, to be said for a counter protest in Washington, not to let Trump and his bullies own Washington. I think there's something to be said about that, because you can just see him saying, see, I really won the election. The other side didn't even come out. And all my fans are there. Assuming, and it's a long shot assumption, which I've already said, you know, I don't believe it'll happen. But if he really is so intent on keeping the presidency, there is no bottom for this guy. None.
It's a great point, because it seems like there is no time that like this one where we should be out screaming and yelling in the streets. However, we also don't want violence. We don't want anyone to get hurt. And that seems to be a recipe. And as you stated, I don't know what the right answer is there.
Well, Joe, we don't want violence. Okay, so let me set it up for you. Suppose Trump says, I'm using the military, or the military that adheres to my philosophy, and I'm using the right wing and the Proud Boys. Is that a time for no violence?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
I think the time for Democrats and others who believe in democracy to be seen is on January 20th. Maybe not literally in the streets of D.C. because of the pandemic. It seems like the Biden folks are doing a really good job of setting up a safe inauguration. But I don't think you want people going to clash with them.
Right.
I think that's what they're hoping for. They're hoping to incite violence. And if they don't have anybody to fight with, then they can't fight.
A peaceful protest is one thing, but if you are...
Well, that's it, Joe. Yeah. There could be a peaceful protest. They could have a lot of people in one spot, and there could be a lot of other people in another spot. I'd like to see that happen, to be honest with you. I hate the idea of Trump getting away with this.
The idea of a peaceful protest, when you have folks on the other side, the Proud Boys and those guys who don't play by those rules, and who will incite violence, regardless of how peaceful our people might be, you know, just plays into their hands. So,
well,
you know,
I get what
you're saying, Alan.
But and I get what you're saying.
I think we need to let them destroy Washington all on their own, and have the D.C. police and the National Guard out there ready and willing to clamp down and arrest them all.
Well, arrest them
and
all,
And I applaud the hotel. Sorry, Alan.
Yeah. No, go ahead, please.
And then the hotel has been closed.
I applaud the Hotel Harrington for closing. I think that's a very good move on their part.
Very good. Sarah, any thoughts on this?
I agree with Libby. We really have to remember what happened in Charlottesville. These are not people who come to peacefully protest. They're people who come to overthrow an election. They're people who come to create chaos and blame black and brown people. This is what these groups do, period. And there's no both sides around it at all. There never was.
No what? No both sides? What do you mean?
When the president said when Charlottesville happened that there are good people on both sides.
Of course.
There are not when it comes to this type of demonstration. Specifically people, groups like the Proud Boys and other hate groups that will certainly, and their enablers.
Well, I hate to say this, because I know you guys are terrific and that your hearts are absolutely in the right place. But I think in a situation like this, there are times to stand tall. And I think this is one of them. It does, they can be 4 miles away, whatever you want. From the Proud Boys and the others. But I do think it's important that the American people show up and say, who voted, you know, by large numbers for Biden, no, you're not going to steal this election from us, and we're not going to let it seem like you're the only ones out there. Sorry.
Well, we should figure out a collective national gesture to do that, each in a safely COVID-safe in our own areas to do that. But...
That's
not to send on Washington, I think.
Yeah,
there's a way to show national unity without going and giving them what they want, which is an opportunity to wreak havoc.
Margaret says Republicans are supporting slash enabling Trump, not because they think he really won the election, but because that him losing will destroy the party as they would like to stay. With the presidency, we've learned some of the ugliness in the party by some, and those seen Republicans should show their constituents who they really are. Then Pat writes, how can incoming congressmen, senators take the oath to uphold the Constitution if their current posture supports a fraudulent election that set them up to serve? That depends on their decisions to preserve our democracy?
Question mark. Can they just watch them? How can they? Just watch them. They'll do it. They're doing it already.
We got 30 seconds. Go ahead, Teresa.
If they think that this vote was fraudulent for the presidency, then is their own vote fraudulent? And anybody
That's
elected
right.
in Georgia, any Congress members, anybody in Michigan, anybody in Ohio, anybody in Arizona,
and
everywhere
Ron
they
Johnson.
Claim the election was fraudulent?
Or as the old saying goes, don't confuse me with the facts.
We got to pause there because I got to take a break. But we'll be back and we'll have our last go round right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Again, a quick programming note. Governor Andrew Cuomo is expected to give an update on the state's response to the coronavirus pandemic, the latest numbers and the latest actions. That will be announced at 11:30, and we'll go to that live as soon as it begins. We have a wonderful panel this morning. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois. Sarah Rogerson and Libby Post, and we do welcome your calls. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Okay, in our moments left, I would like to get to some other stories. The one that I thought was also very interesting is Nancy Pelosi. What does the panel think of this? Nancy Pelosi was reelected. There were some questions of wondering whether she would be and whether her seat was safe. But she was reelected House Speaker. And among the surging pandemic, the new Congress has convened. And the final vote was 216 for Pelosi, 209 for Kevin McCarthy. And of course, Democrats are poised to have the slimmest House majority of either party in 20 years, beginning the session with a 222 to 211 advantage. Alan.
Well, I actually learned something. I'm sure you all did too. Sarah, you're our lawyer in the group. But I learned that you could be speaker without being a member of the House. Did you guys know that?
I didn't know that.
That was in the paper today. Somebody voted for a senator. The newspaper explained.
Oh, Tammy Duckworth. They voted for Tammy Duckworth. Yeah.
Right,
okay.
Right.
All right. I didn't make that connection. Yes. Okay.
Right. And then there was a parenthetical: you can be speaker without being a member of the House.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, what I found interesting about her, you know, I mean, this, it's always tough to be in a last term. And she's made it clear it's her last term. People, don't pay adherence to your instructions quite the same way they do if you thought to be there forever and ever. So there is that. She is 80 years old. I believe that's correct.
Correct.
She'll be 84 when she's out. 82, I'm sorry, when she's out. That's a fair age. The fact that a couple of people decided that they're gonna vote against her, I don't know what that meant, but. Maybe they think it's going to help them politically. I just don't know.
She was supported by the so-called squad. She was supported by the majority of the Democrats. And we can only assume that most thought what I think many Democrats thought, which was maybe now's not the time to screw around with the with the Speaker of the House.
Yeah, the squad has not been polling well lately.
Like,
and maybe
yeah.
that's part of it.
Today, right. maybe today, as they said in the movie Airplane, maybe today was not the day to give up sniffing airplane glue. Maybe today is not the day to change your House Speaker.
Which is true.
I mean, it's
some people. Sorry,
I'm glad the squad voted for her. You know, this is not a time for division and infighting. You know, especially if we end up controlling the Senate, we all need to work together and reverse what's been done in the last 4 years. And if we have both houses and the presidency, we can do that. But if people decide that, oh no, well, we've got this, but you know, I want to go even further and further to the left, we will lose in the midterms and we will lose the House. You know, people need to recognize that what sells in New York City or sells on either coast, right, is not necessarily going to sell in the middle of the country.
Yeah.
And I take it, Libby, that when you say we, you're talking about yourself right here.
Yes.
Because
yes.
The
editorial we
doesn't edit.
The editorial we, right. But the Democrats. The Democrats.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So, go ahead, Teresa.
The other thing that she did yesterday was announce that she's creating this bipartisan select committee on economic disparity and fairness and growth, which I thought was very good, that they're going to focus like a laser beam on economic inequality. And you see that with a lot of the Biden appointments, and she's reinforcing that message with this group. And I do think it's also a tool to help bring together people who are, you know, disaffected in her caucus. And I think that will be both helpful and important.
Right.
Sarah?
I disagree with everybody, but that's all right.
Shocking.
I do.
Well, I want you to articulate that.
There's a lot to unravel here when you talk about poverty policy, when you talk about what liberal democracy really means, when we talk about not chasing back to the middle and in fear of doing the right thing. And I'm not saying that's what anyone is espousing here, but that's, I hear a lot, you know, when I hear we're going to focus on economic disparity, that's fine. There's nothing facially and, you know, wrong with that. That should be done. And systemic injustices that go beyond the neoliberal economic structure, right? Like, I don't think that if Nancy Pelosi, if the party made a decision to go with, let's call it bold new leadership at this time, that would have been an equally legitimate choice. And I don't think Nancy would just like hide in her office and be like, all right, good luck. You know, good luck with the position. She cares about the party. She cares about America. She cares about her state. She cares about our democracy. She would help that person grow into the role. And so, I don't know, I get my feathers ruffled when we start equating things to, you know, low polling numbers for the squad. Polling of who? And who are you talking to? I guess I feel a little bit of a responsibility to lift up the voices of young people and progressive Democrats that I've been listening to over the course of this presidential, and just offer that alternative view and say that we can do both. It's yes and. It's not like if we do that, then everything's going to fall apart and we're going to lose, right? Like we can grow this party together and make sure that all voices are included in that process without losing thousands and thousands of votes. It's all sure. About the message.
Sure. And the Republicans,
he is the progressive Democrat.
Yes, she is.
She is a progressive Democrat, and it's the moderates who voted present. So, I mean, she is that voice. She's been that voice for a long, long, long time. But she also knows how to build a coalition to not just talk about policy, but actually to get it enacted. And that's what we need right now.
And historically, in 2 years, we're going to see another election, right, for the House.
Mm-hmm.
And Teresa, perhaps you want to tell everybody what happens usually when you have an incumbent president and what happens in the House of Representatives.
That the Republicans win.
That's right.
You need to guard against that, and you need to get as much done in the next 2 years. So it's fine for, you know, Bernie and all this talking, but you have to actually, to make a difference in people's lives, you have to actually enact legislation. And right now, there is no other person who has the skills that she has and has emerged as that leader. But you got to bet that she's helping will help that person, is trying to groom that person.
And as
but
I say,
they
Republican,
haven't.
And as I say, sorry. Republican McCarthy didn't lose a single Republican vote.
Yeah, right. I appreciate all that, and I don't disagree with anything that was said in that segment. I'm just saying that we need to give that we're giving that it sounds like we're going back to giving short shrift to what I would say is a new progressive Democrat that's not relating to Nancy Pelosi.
Well, the cat, well, that well cat you got won. The cat vote.
Well, the cat came back.
Interestingly, I think this is what's going on with the Labor Secretary nomination, which is exactly that fight that they're having internally about who gets the job. I mean, this is probably way too wonkish, but this fight is who is the right voice to deal with these economic inequality issues. But if you can get through a major infrastructure bill, which will not only help communities, but also put people back to work. If you can put together a clean energy bill, which is as much a jobs bill as it is a clean energy bill, address climate issue, and it puts people to work, you know, that's the success that you need to have and make some improvements in healthcare.
Well, and there's also, you know, learning from our past and not doing the exact same thing. Running to the center hasn't helped us win. And by us, I mean Democrats. But, you know, there's an opportunity here to reshape the voice. Joe Biden had to do it as part of his presidential campaign, and it worked spectacularly well. So there's just a lot of opportunity here, and I want to make sure that the fear that has loomed over us for the last 4 years doesn't impede the potential progress that we might be able to make over the next four.
All right.
And there are 122 women in the Congress, which is astoundingly exciting. Sorry, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
And there's more gay LGBT members and people of color than ever before.
We have just about 4 minutes left. I do want to quickly talk about about Georgia. We touched on it of where we are right now. But when you look at the next 24 hours and what that's going to be, both candidates we mentioned will have rallies. One, the Democrats will have Joe Biden participating. The Republicans will have the president participating. And so where do these last hours bring us, do you think? And I'm not sure we really touched on the issue of what the news of the last 48 hours, of what impact that has. Alan, would you like to?
I knew you were going to call on me. The answer is I don't know. I have no idea whatsoever. I do know that there are a lot of things to be considered here, one of which is the people of Georgia voted against Trump. That was, to my mind, satisfactory, as Nero Wolf, the detective, used to say. On the other hand, they have shown no propensity not to support other Republicans. So I just don't know where their heads are and whether or not Trump's nonsense will stop them from turning out. There are those people, CNN keeps running headlines, and others who think it will. But, you know, I just don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I listened to Governor Kemp on Fox last night, and
Georgia Governor
he looked exhausted.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Georgia Governor Kemp. And he was working as hard as he possibly could to get off the topic of the Trump call and onto the topic of the election. And he looked beyond exasperated by the conversation. You've got to believe it will dampen their vote a bit. Voter turnout will be the key. But again, my concern is, will this then make people doubt the outcome of the Georgia election as well? And that will be, if it's close and the Democrats win, will they use this to create questions about the validity of the win? That's deeply concerning.
Excuse me. And do you still have the Secretary of State and the governor in the same position that they are now on ensuring the integrity of the vote or trying in some way. And I'm not accusing them of this, but just raising the question of trying to save face by allowing some of the perhaps the recall recounts and so forth to go on.
It was interesting to me in the interview that one thing that he did say is, you know, when I took the oath of office, I swore to allegiance to the Constitution. And if he keeps doing that, you know, then we'll stay on track.
Oh, we'll try. Sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. Will the public believe it? That's the problem. Will people believe it?
Yeah. Sarah, go ahead.
The officials in Georgia know that all eyes are on them.
Yes.
They know. They have to be on good behavior. Their papers have to be excellent. I wouldn't be surprised if they aren't staffing up, if they aren't giving their campaign workers stern reminders of their constitutional obligations. Like, there's not, this may be the most secure election in the history of the state of Georgia.
You know, I was so struck by what you just said before, which was, you know, that there are more women in the House, there are more people of color in the House and the rest of it. I've always believed, and I've been saying for months and months now, that that's what this whole thing is all about. There is a group of people in this country, and we can call them Republicans because mainly they are, who don't want to transfer power. They don't mm-hmm. want. They don't want people who are gay, people who are black, people who are Hispanic taking over their country. This is the way they've always had it. And so the fact that it's paying off now and it's actually happening is proof positive to me that they knew what they were talking about and that this is really going to be a transformational election.
We are out of time. We're out of time, but I want to thank everybody for being with us. It was very nice to have you all with us for our first panel of the year. Well, just see what kind of hellish things we have to discuss for the rest of this week. Alan Chartok, thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
Teresa, Sarah, Libby, you're the best. Happy New Year to all of you. Thank you very much. We'll be right back.